You're listening to a Score North podcast right now, and if you're a business owner, so are your customers. In fact, I could be talking about your business right now, telling the tens of thousands of loyal fans about you and sending them to your business. Find out how you can partner with your favorite Score North podcast. Visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner. Fill out the form, and we'll get in touch with you quickly. Once Phil, Judd, Declan, or others start talking about your company, you'll be amazed at how many fans start showing up. So visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner.
These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
DeLong, score! Bonino to Kaprizov for the finish. And the power play goal has Minnesota on the board first. For Greenway, he scores! Fire, save, Kemper, rebound, they score! Johansson out front on the rebound. Back across, Fiala scores!
Was that Walls on color commentary?
That was Nanny. It was Lou.
It's
Lou chuckling in the background.
Louis was just chuckling after the goals. Yeah. Every time there's a goal, he's just chuckling.
They're so damn good now, you can't stop them. Right. They're a combination of the 78 Canadians and 85 Oilers. You can't contain these guys. They just beat up on teams.
Who's the Gretzky? I think it's probably Parise on the fourth line has become the Gretzky.
Oh, there's only one Gretzky comparison on this team. There's only one Gretzky on this team, and he wears 97.
Well, we'll do a dive. In fact, we're going to talk about what some of the other teams in town can learn from some of the uncomfortable and big boy decisions the Wild franchise has made this year. And we'll talk some Twins today. As usual, they're scheduled to play, fingers crossed, that there's no more COVID outbreaks, but they're scheduled to play a doubleheader today, a traditional doubleheader in Oakland. But, boys, it's always fun when we have our show schedule ready to rock and roll, and then we get to crumple it up because Godfather and Toddfather and Peter Schrager, Mount Rushmore of mockers, come flowing in with last-minute mock drafts. And so I think, yes, executive decision here, we're gonna do the three-round, for Purple Daily today, we're going to do the three-round alternating Toddfather-Godfather mock. So if you want that, Purple Daily, find that later today. But Peter Schrager has a 2.0. And he doesn't mock lightly. Like, there's a reason why he doesn't have a 4.0, 5.0. He waits for his first mock. He pounces with just a couple mocks leading up. I think he does three total. And he doesn't do the first one until you get into April. He's not one of these guys that clowns around with mocks in January. Okay?
Hey, don't insult those people. Those people are very valuable to our show.
Those people have
Leave
to make a living,
too. Leave those people alone. Well, and we need them for fodder. We like them.
And so, boys, we're gonna fire this Peter Schrager mock up here, powered by our friends at Wamatech. All right, if you've got a broken-down offensive line, well, they can't help you with that. But they can help you with a broken-down phone, tablet, or laptop. Wamatech is a trusted supplier of pre-owned cell phones, tablets, laptops, and new accessories. They source pre-owned devices directly and pass the savings on to you guys. They'll even buy your old device for cash. Local company, and every device they sell is tech certified with a warranty. Wamatech.com. That's WAMATEK.com. Are you ready?
Let's do this thing.
Are you ready? Then, for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, here is Peter Schrager's 2.0.
Let's get ready to mock it.
Let's get ready to mock it! Judd's like, what are they doing?
Yeah, what are you talking about? What the hell are you talking about?
We'll get to
Schrager's mock, okay?
Judd explains sometime.
We'll get to Judd explains Degeneration X. Actually, that's next week's homework assignment. Judd explains Degeneration X.
Okay.
All right, Peter Schrager with the first overall pick. Jacksonville takes Trevor Lawrence. Zach Wilson to the Jets.
Great pick.
And now the fork in the road. Who's going to fall for the Mac Jones bait? Is it Peter? Yes.
Oh, Peter.
Peter has Mac Jones going to the San Francisco 49ers.
Peter.
So how much do you trust Peter's instinct here?
So it's clear that John Lynch and San Francisco is doing an outstanding job, right, of putting out the subterfuge. Like, they are clearly selling this hard. They are clearly doing a very good job of getting it through to everybody. We really like Mac Jones. Mac Jones might be Mac Jones, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not buying it, But it's just become crystal clear that they are going to sell this until they don't take Mac Jones with the third pick.
And he writes, "We're less than 2 weeks away, and I'm still feeling Mac Jones is the guy. I'm told the Niners will have still not made their decision and continue to do their work on all three quarterback prospects who would be available, Jones, Fields, and Trey Lance. Jones had one of the greatest college football seasons we've seen in recent years, and pro scouts like him a lot. Yeah, but he's playing with, like, all NFL caliber players against inferior opposing players, so... Yeah.
Don't get it.
I don't know. I don't know if I buy this. I don't know that I buy that they would trade up to three and not know who they're going to pick. Too kind of feels like they would have made that decision before trading up to three.
Yep.
But I don't know. And by the way, before we get to the Vikings in a few picks here, the running tally so far in all the mocks we've done across Mackie and Judd and Purple Daily: Elijah Vera Tucker, the offensive lineman from USC, and Christian Barmore, the defensive lineman from Alabama, have been mocked to the Vikings five times each. They're at the top of this list. Christian Darrisaw, the offensive tackle from Virginia Tech, four times, and Quiddy Pay, edge rusher, Michigan, three times, with like 12 other players being mocked to the Vikings at least once in the mocks that we've brought to this show. Declan's guy, Kyle Pitts, okay, going to the Falcons at four.
Great pick.
Sanity is back.
Yeah, great selection.
He's not free-falling.
Yeah, future like Hall of Famer, Kyle Pitts.
In the mock
yesterday.
Yeah. We also, we can admit our mistake on Purple Daily. We should have just drafted Kyle Pitts instead of trading back, but we wanted to keep trading back just to see what would happen. It was more just an exercise. All right, the Bengals taking Penei Sewell, the best offensive tackle, at least on most teams' boards. Jamar Chase, the first wide receiver off the board at six to the Dolphins. Jalen Waddle, a little run on wide receivers here, going to the Cardinals via trade with the Lions.
Ooh.
Cardinals continue their uber-aggressive offseason by acquiring yet another weapon for Kyle Murray.
See, if
Kyler Murray.
Fitzy gone.
I want Fitzy to play for
There's
the
There's no room for Fitzy if they do this.
There's plenty of room here if he can beat out Chad Beebe for the third wide receiver.
Oh, yes. Spot. God, that'd make me so happy.
I don't know about that. I mean, B.C. Johnson? Come on. It's a pretty tough one. All right.
Justin Fields to the Panthers at eight.
Oh, okay.
Which would be their...
Interesting.
It would be their dream like 3 weeks ago because they just traded for Sam Darnold. I think they traded for Sam Darnold with the idea that the quarterbacks they want are just not going to be there.
Yep.
So, I don't know. We'll see. All right. Trey Lance going to the Broncos at nine. So now four quarterbacks in the first nine picks.
George Payton.
Which I think is good for the Vikings if they're not going to draft a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Then it means more non-quarterbacks available for them.
All right.
Patrick Surtain to the Cowboys.
Yep.
11, the Giants take J.C. Horn, cornerback. So a little cornerback run here.
I'm envious right now.
Patriots trading up to 12 with the Eagles to snag Devontae Smith, the third wide receiver off the board. And then the Chargers take Rashawn Slater, 13th overall. Before I get to the Vikings.
That hurts a little bit.
Darrisaw is available. Quiddy Pay is available.
Vera Tucker still?
Who am I missing? All the quarterbacks have gone to this point.
Yeah,
I am guessing. I am guessing that Schrags has them taking an offensive tackle, despite the fact that I do think that at this point in time, Zim is probably pushing for a trade back and trying to get Quiddy Pay. I'm going to go with Mocker Schrager is taking an offensive tackle.
Darrisaw, I think Darrisaw is the pick here too. Right. Actually, you know what? I'm going to change that up. I think he's going to go Christian Barmore. I think he's going. Going defense for Mike Zimmer here.
Fair enough.
I was closer. Jalen Phillips,
edge rusher
from Miami.
Wow. Okay.
I want a mock.
Here's the write-up. The Vikings have a bunch of their best pass rushers returning from injury, but that doesn't mean they wouldn't take another in the top 15. I think Phillips could be the guy and the first pass rusher off the board when it's all said and done. That's the type of thing I think. That makes sense. Like Jalen Phillips, isn't he the one with all the concussion issues? And it just feels like something like this could happen where it's Quiddy Pay. No, it's actually the Vikings have Quiddy Pay fourth on their board or something.
Sure.
And Jalen Phillips is number
Keep
one.
Keep going down. I'm just curious to see where the rest of the tackles fall. Yep.
Elijah Vera Tucker, Christian Darrisaw to the Lions, Micah Parsons to the Raiders, Tevin Jenkins, offensive tackle, Oklahoma State to the Dolphins. And then from there, Rashad Bateman, 20th to the Bears. That makes some sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, not a whole lot. Quiddy Pay into the 20s. Greg Rousseau at 26. So So there it is. That's your Peter Schrager 2.0 here.
Everybody knows. Everybody knows Phil Mackey. Zim wants his defense. Damn it. Give me my defensive guys.
That is the second time Jalen Phillips has been mocked to the Vikings, by the way. So he moves up into fifth place in the overall mock standings to this point.
Okay. Well, if that takes place, I fully will admit that I won't be surprised, but I will have some real trepidation about what the Vikings are doing.
I would not like that.
I think a lot of people won't like that.
No, I wouldn't like
that. It kind of feels like they could trade back. Yes. It kind of feels like they could trade back and get that. But if the Patriots have already traded up, you know, Washington seems like the major target to trade with in I think they're at 19, right?
Mm-hmm. So if Darrisaw's there, though, if you're Spielman, don't you have to tell Mike, you got to sit down and be quiet right now. I'm taking Darrisaw. Like, I'm not saying he will. I'm just, like, if that player is there, don't you got to take that player?
No, but let's play this out, okay? Because I agree with your logic, which is they need offensive linemen. It's been just pass blocking has been a chronic problem for them for years. But let's say Christian Darrisaw is the third-ranked offensive tackle on their board, and Jalen Phillips, for instance, is the number one pass rusher on their board. What's the prudent thing to do? Forget about team need for a second. If you're just looking to take the best, highest upside player available in the first round, and you've got the number one edge rusher on your board sitting there at 14, like I can get with that logic, even though it doesn't help fill the biggest need right now, which is offensive line.
I guess my question then to come full circle about Darrisaw would be this. Is Darrisaw an 8 to 10 year guy? Like if you say to yourself, there's three guys here, but they're all damn good, right? Like they're all really good. And if we draft him, because I'm not saying that the Vikings should just take an offensive tackle for 2021. That's not my point. That's a bad idea because that's where you force a pick. Don't like that. Mm-hmm. My point is if you look at Darrisaw and you say he's the third guy on our board, but all top of the top three potential offensive tackle prospects are 8 to 10 year guys, then I say take him. You need help there. And I'm going to go by, Phil, what I think are the toughest positions to find. Like, they're expensive, they're tough, because a first-round pick, again, I've got 5 years of control there. So if I think that Darrisaw is not the best, but he's within that group, and I've got 5 years of control on the cap, basically, on his salary, that's going to make it very tempting for me.
I think the biggest question with Jalen Phillips, I'll just read this from withthefirstpick.com. The problem is that Phillips could be one hit away from being out of college football forever. Each successive concussion makes it easier to get another, and Phillips has already had three concussions in his football career. He has already retired once due to those brain injuries. An argument can be made that the NFL doesn't really care all that much about player safety, although a team sinking valuable draft capital into a player with a significant injury history is a completely different story. So that's the thing. It seems like a lot of teams may have, just based on reporting and looking at mock draft big boards and whatnot, that Jalen Phillips, if you took out the concussion history, that he could be the highest upside pass rusher in the draft.
Sure.
But how much do you want to commit in terms of draft capital
None.
To a guy that might get one hit
Zero.
And be done? And then and by the way, your other edge rusher just is coming off missing a full season with neck surgery.
Yeah.
So the more you think about it from that perspective, I just don't know how much sense it makes to draft him with the 14th pick. Now, if you trade back, let's say you trade back and you pick up an extra second round pick, you mm-hmm. strong arm Washington into giving you a second round pick to move up. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think Washington has a second-round pick. We can double-check that. But let's say someone trades up with you, you get a second-round pick. I would be more inclined to take a risk on Jalen Phillips if I also had the backup of, like, a second-round pick and two or three third-round picks, depending on the trade, right?
You know what?
But if he's my only pick in the first 70-plus picks, I'm a little nervous about
it. You know what? I am not drafting in the first round a guy with concussion problems. There's no way. I can't quantify it. Like with a knee, I can stick him on a table, right? And I can bend his knee back and forth and I can say, hey, you know, this knee seems pretty stable, right?
Yeah.
Or like an ankle. Concussions? You're guessing. Like If you think about all of the work that teams do to sit down with prospects and talk to them, right, and they go through their histories and they go through their Twitter accounts, like if you think about every, why on earth would you ever take a guy with a concussion problem? It's the one thing you have no chance to quantify. Yeah. Like you're lost.
Yeah, it's a it's
hold on a second here. I'm checking out the second round because I did want to check on Washington because that's a really good question because that does make the most sense to me as well. Yes, they are. They have the 19th pick in the second round, which is 51 overall, right before Chicago.
Okay, yeah, I'll take that.
So
I'll
yeah,
take that one for sure. Just float that one over. If you know what it could be, like if Trey Lance falls or something. I mean, if Justin Fields falls for sure, then you're taking phone calls at 14. I mean, I would just draft one of those guys at 14, but I don't think the Vikings would. I think they would trade back. If it's a quarterback that falls, I think you could strong arm a team like Washington into giving you that second round pick.
Probably.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Yep. We're gonna be doing daily mock draft updates on Purple Daily from this point the next 9 days, so be sure to check us out. And you know what the good news is? The good news is for Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman, if you whiff on that 14th overall pick, means you're gonna have a lot more time for golf in 2022 because you are going to be unemployed. And if you have a lot more time for golf, I would recommend PXG Minneapolis. Before you head back to that ranch, is it Kentucky that Mike Zimmer has the ranch in?
Yeah, Kentucky.
Kentucky, right?
Yes.
So before you head to Kentucky, if this draft pick doesn't work out for you after you've been relieved of your duties, just stop at PXG Minneapolis. It's a golfer's paradise. The new Gen 4 golf clubs have landed. Drivers, fairways, hybrids, irons. These are PXG's flagship clubs, and they will help your game. You can even look better with the PXG Spring and Summer Apparel, which just arrived in-store. PXG Minneapolis in Southdale Center. And find out more at pxg.com/Minneapolis. Boys, last night, the Wild took care of business once again with a 5-2 victory. This is their fourth straight victory. And this is also their third time in four games they've scored five goals. They had an eight-goal outburst about 2 weeks ago against Colorado. So the goals are coming in bunches. And Zach Parise played the second most he had the second highest time on ice of the month of April for him. Just an exhausting 13 minutes and 34 seconds on the ice last night.
Lou Gehrig. He's Lou Gehrig.
The Iron Horse, man.
It's unbelievable.
And so we were all texting last night during this game, and after the third period, he only had 8 minutes logged or 8.5 minutes or something like that. You know, how many teams can you think of that have made the uncomfortable decisions that the Wild have had to make this year, specifically with Zach Parise and moving him from a high-profile, essentially team leader role on and off the ice to this complimentary? I mean, he's not even on the power play shifts anymore.
He's basically fourth-line winger.
Yeah.
He's done a nice job, but that's what he is.
And it's working. The team is playing better because of it. But in terms of locker room dynamics and just a guy that's been one of the best players in franchise history, it's a big boy uncomfortable decision. And so I guess I want your guys' thoughts as the Judd's Hockey Show tandem, your thoughts on how that move is working, and also what can some of the other teams in Minnesota learn from the uncomfortable decisions the Wild have had to make this year.
So this is a great conversation because it's not a simple one, but it's extremely intriguing. And it occurred to me during the course of the game last night in watching it that this is, and by the way, it's not done yet. Like there's more changes to come. They're not a complete team. They're a good team, but they're not a complete team. This is as encouraged as I've been about this team in years. But the interesting thing about this and the dynamic from the pivot that this team has done quickly compared to like the Wolves or the Twins have had success, not in the playoffs, obviously, but the last 2 years. But what the Wild has done is they have found the sweet spot with their GM and Bill Guerin, because Bill went to Pittsburgh and started his executive career. And analytically, he had a definite say. Like his job was partially to digest these things at the time and pass them on to the GM and have a working knowledge of basically the underlying stats, which have become a big deal in the last few years, you know, last 10 years or so in hockey. But what's interesting about Guerin and what the Twins lack, at least with Falvey and Levine, And what the Wolves lack, for sure, with Gerson, is Bill Guerin also has in his repertoire, Phil and Dex, the mix of a guy who knows what it takes to win. He won two cups as a player. He was a captain. So when we talk about the Twins, and like, this all makes sense, but the chemistry things are sort of weird sometimes, and like, what are you doing with people? Like you're not empowering them. Bill Guerin knows and has a knowledge of what that looks like and what that takes, which to me is a really interesting step because, you know, Gerson or Falvey or Phil can tell you what they know about the sport, or me or Dex, but like, we don't have that underlying working knowledge of the intangibles and the chemistry. And I'm going to give you one thing that occurred to me that Guerin and the Wild has done a spectacular job of that the Wolves are lacking completely. And it's a blind spot. A veteran presence of a player who doesn't have to be great, but he has to be good. Like, you can't just stink. Like, you can't not play. But a veteran player that they can put out there who knows how to win, has been around players that have won. Butler was bad because he didn't care about people. Like, Jimmy Butler just was there to, like, great player.
It's happening a little bit in Miami again right now.
Yeah,
I don't know if
exactly.
You saw his comments
and
a couple
Hero
nights ago.
Hero has turned into a mess now, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's a...
Jimmy basically told the media the other night that this team needs to play bully ball again. Back to playing bully ball. Like, that's the only thing he knows.
Yeah,
need to play bully ball.
But that's not what teams really need. Like, it's fine because he's good. But the point is, imagine if Cat and Ant had a veteran guy like let's just say a really solid Taj. Like, if Taj came back here and was not fried completely and could still play. Because, I mean, that guy knew how to win. He was a smart player. And in Bonino and Cole, who Guerin traded for Nick during the time between the break and the start of the season, and he traded for Cole at the start of the season, between those two guys, they've won cups. Like, they know what this looks like. They can lead. And if you wear the C or the A, who cares? The important thing is, do you have the ability to show the way? And that's the step that I think the Wild has geniusly taken, that not all executives who probably didn't play the sport or have success understand that part of the chemistry.
Yeah, it's a... I love your point about a guy who understands the human side and like the dynamics. What does a championship dynamic look and feel like? What does the leadership structure need to do? How do you empower the young players in the right way, right? What's the right blend of just forget about analytics and data for a second, because that's important too, but what does the room need to feel like? What's the hierarchy? What's the environment like? Billy Guerin understands that. Now, he was winning cups in a different era. Like, you're talking about a different generation of young players, and so there are differences in the way that you need to handle young players now compared to when Billy Guerin was winning cups as a player. But then you also have to have you can't be a master of the human element and then ignore all analytics too, right? Because then that's how you wind up with Zach Parise on the top line at age 36 instead of on the fourth line, right? So it kind of feels like Billy Guerin understands and embraces both enough as he's gone about building this thing. He clearly pays attention to the types of leaders you need in the room, and he also has a sense for, okay, Parise is considered a leader, but he's not good enough analytically to play as a top six forward anymore, and so we need to make that uncomfortable decision to pull him over here. And there are I've got three things, but I want to let Dex chime in. But I have one thing that each team can learn from the Wild's uncomfortable Parise decision for sure. But Dex, you chime in.
A few things that stand out. Number one, from his playing days, I mean, because he was a decorated player. He's been on trades to both sides. So I believe it was Scott Burnside of The Athletic did a great piece on him like a month ago, close to the trade deadline. His experience as a player and as an executive who has been both on the forefront of trades. And in 2007, Guerin was moved to San Jose. The San Jose Sharks were a very good team in the West, kind of similar to the Wild right now, a team that could possibly compete for a cup. And Bill Guerin was the last piece to push them over. Well, Guerin gets there. It's uncomfortable. He's pressing. He's trying to be that big acquisition and rise up to the situation. And it kind of it didn't work out, and he recognized that. So after that, he goes to New York, and the Islanders are a bottom feeder, but then he goes back to the Pittsburgh Penguins. He approves a trade to the Penguins, who are on the cusp of winning another cup, and he accepts his role. He's now at the end of his career. He knows he doesn't have to press. He knows he doesn't have to be this dynamic player, but he can be someone in the room that really, really matters. And I think he has the self-awareness that I'm not just going to pull a Chuck Fletcher and start making trade to get us one step over the hump, and it might cost things in the room, and it might cost us draft picks and prospects down the line. He's not going to force a trade like that. But I also think he knows when he's only been here for, 2 years now, and he knows what doesn't work in that room. So he was able to break up the core. You trade Jason Zucker, a darling in this state, right? Everyone loves Jason Zucker and what he means on and off the ice. He wasn't afraid to trade him, gets a first-round pick and a top prospect pack. He also gives out reasonable contracts, what we've seen so far. He gives out a 3-year deal to Cam Talbot and in goaltending, one of the most volatile positions. I mean, like, look at Florida right now with Sergei Bobrovsky. Like, he is a mess right now, and they're locked in for a 7-year deal. Cam Talbot's locked into a 3-year deal making chump change. Like, he's not going to make a forced decision just because he wants to. He knows what it takes to win as a player and as an executive, and he also surrounds himself, too, with the right people. Like, I know him and basically Dean Evason work hand-in-hand with how they want this vision to work. This isn't just Dean pulling all the puppet strings. It's definitely Guerin behind the scenes. I mean, he had the gall to scratch Zach Parise earlier this year. That would have never happened in past regimes, and that's, I think, totally influenced by what Bill Guerin brings.
Because you've got to be the most important thing is twofold. You have to be willing to hurt feelings, but you have to have the credibility to do that as well. So if I just scratch you and I'm some executive who looks at spreadsheets, players are like, screw you. Yeah. But if I've won cups and I'm your boss, they're like, whoa. And Phil, I mean, this goes back how long now that I harped on and talked about and complained about the clear lack of accountability with that team. Like, that room, it's not a stretch to say that room had run amok. And nobody until now basically said, no, this isn't how it can work. And they brought in people to change that.
It hasn't really been widely reported and fleshed out because these guys are fan favorites. And the acquisitions of these guys, Parise and Suter, really helped turn the franchise around for the last 8 years. Like, they've become a relevant franchise in part because of those huge free agent signings. So overall, yep, they've been great signings. But those guys have also sort of presided over a little bit of a Mean Girls vibe behind the scenes that might, you know, the minute that Mike Yeo starts to sputter, instead of rallying around, it's kind of like, kind of done with him, right? Like, they're very quick to sort of create a divide sometimes behind the scenes when that's not the way that you go about building a great culture as a leader. Mm-hmm. I don't think those guys have always been great as leaders behind the scenes,
right? We
have heard,
but I mean, and that's a tough job, and not everybody is meant to lead. A lot of people who are very talented at what they do, but the problem is if you're good, you're looked to, and that's an issue in sports because you shouldn't necessarily be looked to control things. Do you guys think for one second that this team, which is a good team, I feel like they're exceeding what we expected. Do you guys think for one second that it's an accident that Koivu is gone, and all of a sudden everything is changed because things are changed?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so.
Because people
just wasn't that great of a player the last couple of years.
No, he wasn't.
So that added to
but there's a difference between being a stoic, quiet guy who commands respect and just being sort of a cantankerous SOB.
Yeah,
right. Like, there's a difference there, and now they've got guys who get their roles, and they've got guys who know. I mean, Koivu's problem was he tried to lead without the credibility. It's like, so you were good in Finland. Okay, that's awesome. Like, have you won cups here? Have you done? And people would say, oh, who cares? That's not a big deal. I'm telling you right now, it is. I mean, if you work with the person who's talented and think that they know everything and they haven't done crap and they're but they're like, oh, you got to listen to me. Eventually, mm-hmm. you're just going to say, screw you.
Yeah. No, it's true.
It's a problem.
It's true. Credibility matters. Reference points matter. There's a big difference when Joe Torre back in the day walks into the clubhouse as the manager of your baseball team.
Yep.
You perk up a little bit. Okay. He was a great player.
Yep.
And then he became a great manager and he perks up. And it's, you know, as opposed to like when Mike Yeo walks into a room and he was an assistant, I think, on a team that might have won a Stanley Cup in Pittsburgh, like in 09. I can't remember the timeline for him, but like, you know, all right, you weren't a great player that made it in the NHL or anything. It just makes it more of an uphill climb. And that's not necessarily a knock on Yeo. It's just a reality. And Billy Guerin seems to bring, I'm not going to go all in yet because this is just, it's a pop-up season and we'll see. And he's still fairly new here. But it seems like he has struck the right tone strategically, analytically, and from a roster building and leadership standpoint. That's fun. So throw quick here, because the real uncomfortable move, in addition to just saying goodbye to some key veterans, but scratching Zach Parise a few weeks ago and then moving him, and Evason is in this conversation too, but moving him to the fourth line it shouldn't be shocking because he's 36 years old and he's just not the player that he was when the Wild signed him. Like, this is what happens when you get into your mid to late 30s. But it is kind of shocking. And then, oh my God, Zach Parise has been demoted to the fourth line and was scratched for making a selfish play, extending his shift, right? So what are some other uncomfortable potential big boy moves that other teams in town could make? And I'm just going to throw these out and get you guys' thoughts. Timberwolves. D'Angelo Russell has come off the bench the last 8 games. The Wolves are 3-5. They've gotten blown out a few times, but he provides, to me, better value off the bench. I'm still not convinced, even though Gerson Rosas came on this show a couple weeks ago and said, hey, you got to ignore the way that D'Lo and Edwards look together under Ryan Saunders. You got to ignore that because Chris Finch is going to use those guys better together. I still don't think the best strategy is putting those guys out there together all the time. I think you have to be selective. And so one guy should start. The other guy should maybe overlap a little and come off the bench. D'Lo is not a complete player. He's a good scorer who can get hot for some games and he can distribute, but he's not like a 40-minute horse of a James Harden-type player. He's just not. I think his value is off the bench, potentially long-term. Mm-hmm. So the big boy move would be once this injury grace period, and maybe he comes off the bench the rest of the year and they can just frame it as, yeah, you're coming off knee surgery, we'll just bring you off the bench, but would you stick to that long-term with a max player who came in here thinking he was going to be the man and bring him off the bench? That would be a big boy move.
Would I stick to that? Yes. I also think that there has to be a question beyond that asked, which is D'Lo the right fit for this team long-term? And I'm telling you, if you look at this right now, so Cat is a really good player, right? Like, he's got his faults. I get that completely. He definitely is not the captain that he perceives himself to be of this team. But Karl Anthony Towns is one of the top most gifted players in this league, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That being said, I will ask you this too. Why can't the Wolves 2021-22 be what the Wild is this year? Why can't they be? Like, they've got talent. Cat is talent. Ant is talent, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's no reason why, and we can all laugh because they're the Wolves as much as we want, but there's no reason why you can't look at that roster, and if you feel that you have the right coach in place, look across town at this team and say, we've got talent too. We need to make the right moves. We're probably going to, in doing so, tick some people off. We don't care. Because if we get this right, there is no reason why we can't contend for a playoff spot.
And I think you need, like, the idea of Rubio coming in as the veteran glue, and Ed Davis was also supposed to be that, but he just isn't good enough anymore. He just doesn't play.
Yeah.
He was your guy, the idea by the way. Of Rubio made some sense, but I think you need someone who's a better defender. I think if you brought in the right grinder defender,
yep.
wing type player, someone that can come in and just be like a veteran. I think of PJ, the Wolves tried to get PJ Tucker for like 3 years, and I mean, he's chasing championships now, rightfully so. So I don't even know what his contract status is. I think he got traded to the Bucks this year. But like that type of a dude that comes in and says, I'm a 3-and-D guy, I'm a wing player, I'm a combo guard, and I'm like, I know what it takes to win and play at a high level and screw everybody. Like, so, but not in a Jimmy Butler way.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
On the Twins front, Judd brought this up a couple weeks ago, but since 2018, Miguel Sano is batting .217 with a .311 on base percentage. The only value he brings is 2 weeks once in a while where he gets hot. And he's not a great defensive player. Mm-hmm. Doesn't hit for average on base. He doesn't run the base as well. Like, he's hurt a lot. The big boy decision would be either just moving on from him altogether and just sort of giving up on the idea that he's going to be this breakout star that you thought he was going to be, or moving him to a part-time role where he's not an everyday, where you're not putting him in against high-velocity pitchers that he struggles with. Coming to terms with Miguel Sano as a part-time player would be, a wild equivalent for the Twins. And then I'll give you the last
one. I love that one, yes. 1,000%. Do it tomorrow. Do it today. Do it today against Oakland.
The real big boy move in town would be moving on from your good, not great, your comfortable starting quarterback, Kirk Cousins, at some point. That if you really want to win a championship, if you're the Wild and you really want to win a championship, I'm sorry, but Zach Parise can't be on your top line. Can't be on your second line.
Yep.
He's got to be on your fourth line or off the team at this point.
Yep.
If you want to win a championship, Kirk Cousins can't be your starting quarterback for that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't be. So what's the big boy decision? You're going to just keep pretending like, we can. We'll just
scrap heap
another left over.
No, I've got it. And it's not a player. The big boy move is Spielman calls the head coach in and says, as of today, if you are going to coach this team, you're going to coach the entire team. And that conversation should have happened 2 years back, at least, if not 3 years back. That's the thing. And look, Mike is really good at coaching defense, and that's awesome. And if you want to go coach defense, there's jobs for that. It's called defensive coordinator, and you can have one because you're good at that. But if you're going to be coach of this team, you've got to coach the whole team. And that does not mean saying, well, I do coach offense. I love to run. You love to run because you're trying to keep your defense off the field, okay? So I really think the big boy conversation in Egan that should have taken place at some point, and I don't think it has, was we need to be, like, once you sign Kirk, you're in on offense. Like, this is not a hand the ball off and let's hope everything goes good. This is we pivoted. You pivoted, and one of the most important people that works for your team didn't pivot with it. And my question is why? And I really think the knockdown drag out that should have taken place was that. Was, Mike, we're going to draft tackles. We need to get better immediately in places that are going to benefit our offense. And in fact, we trust you so much to coach defense that we're going to get good on that side of the ball because that's where the priority is. That would be a big fight, I'm sure, and it wouldn't be pretty and it wouldn't be smooth, but that would be my big boy conversation, which is your business card says Mike Zimmer, head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, not head of the defense.
Don't you think that ship has kind of sailed?
It's gone, but that's my point. But I'm talking about...
He's a defensive coordinator who kind of dabbles in being a head coach.
Yes, but I'm talking about eating an uncomfortable conversation for breakfast, PJ Fleck.
Do you pour milk on those uncomfortable conversations? A little sweet and low?
You know what I do? Sour milk. Old milk, because I'm so tough. I'm so tough.
Clumpy milk.
I eat clumpy milk on my cornflakes just to chew through it. But I mean...
God.
I'll give you a Twins one, though, and it's a small one. Reprioritizing how you see, especially your starting pitchers and the expectations. And it shouldn't be, this should not be tough, but it clearly is. But reprioritizing so that if Berríos is lights out, I don't just apply my philosophy to him. Or Pineda. Like, and that, this shouldn't be a discussion, but it's become one. And it's obviously tough. Because they've just got their thought processes of how starting pitchers should work and pitch counts and stuff, Phil. But I really do believe that for the ultimate success of this team into the playoffs, that is a conversation.
Is there any reason today, for instance, if he's going well, that he can't just pitch all seven innings against Oakland, unless his pitch count's at 100, you know, after five?
No.
Like, my goal would be going into that game, I wouldn't tell him this because I don't want to put extra pressure on, but he's like, the goal would be that he pitches a seven-inning complete game in that doubleheader game, just to give the bullpen some relief, too, going into to more games the rest of the week. So, oh, those are some things that maybe teams can learn from the Wild making their big boy decisions. Presented by our friends at Federated Mutual Insurance Company. So Federated's been helping business owners for over 100 years in the state of Minnesota. They're based in Owatonna. They're one of us. And just think, if you're a business owner, how helpful it is when you've got risk management and you've got just sort of a guiding hand that can help make your business as successful as it possibly can be. Also worth noting, Federated recently launched MyShield, the online client destination for risk management resources. MyShield has tons of resources that you can check out at federatedinsurance.com. And remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours. All right, boys, we're talking Twins every day on this show. You want deep dive, break it down Twins discussions. The Mackie and Judd podcast feed and the Score North YouTube channel are the places for you. Also, we get asked, are you guys on the radio still? Yes, we are on the radio from 5 to 6 o'clock every single weekday. Score North Radio, AM 1500 in the Twin Cities. The Score North app and scorenorth.com are also central hubs for everything we do. And a shout out to our friends Brad Cole and David Branstad. The 10,000 Swings Minnesota Golf Podcast is off and running over the last month. I joined it for a Masters breakdown last week, which was a blast. But if you're a golf nerd, you're a Minnesota golf nerd, they're breaking down PGA Tour events every week, fun news, and also local happenings. 10,000 Swings, Apple, Spotify, scorenorth.com. Blake Barrett's super agent, Blake Barrett's local agent of Adam Thielen. I think Rashad Bateman, I think he has Bateman
there
too.
I think you're right.
He will join at 10,000 Swings this upcoming weekend. Boys, we're going to do a player A, player B comparison here for talking Twins. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Player A, no longer with the Twins, but player A was an infielder who, as a Twin, compiled a 648 OPS. And that is about 25% below the average major league OPS. He was a very, very poor hitter who really didn't hit for much power or anything, but he could play some pretty good defense, okay? 648 OPS.
Okay.
Player B has an even worse OPS over the time span that we're looking at here. So 648 was the first player.
Okay.
618 OPS for this guy. Just a disaster offensively. So player A is Nick Punto in his career as a Twin offensively. And player B is Jorge Polanco since the start of the 2020 season. Yep. He has been a worse offensive player than Nick Punto was. Credit to our friend Michael McGivern for sending me this nugget on Twitter, by the way. What do you make of that?
Well, in 2020, we found out that Polanco was hurt. So I was willing to go down that path of, well, he's banged up again and he plays through it, you know, which is, I guess, a credit to him to try to play hurt because he's trying to stay on the field and it's not going well. But the more I see him, you know what I think? I think the first half of 2019, which was great, was a really fun flash in the pan. And I don't think that Polanco is a terrible player. But I also don't think he's great, and I could see him being replaced by Arise here at some point in time if Donaldson can stay healthy, obviously, at third base. I could see him being replaced by Arise at some point here because I'm beginning to think that Polanco teased us, and it was fun, and he was an all-star and spent part of that year in the MVP discussion. But I think that this is probably closer, unfortunately, to the real Jorge Polanco than that was. That's what I think of that.
There's also the elephant in the room of he got popped 80-game suspension in, I think it was March of 2018. So he missed the entire first half of 2018, came back, was pretty good the second half of that season. The timing kind of works out to where his career might have been a little bit in the balance after 2017. He just wasn't quite panning out the way that they had hoped.
Mm-hmm.
Get on some supplements that might help you and then come back and perform pretty well at the end of the 2017 season. Then he gets hit for 80 games, plays pretty well when he comes back, and then explodes at the beginning of 2019. Was a legitimate MVP candidate, batting like 340 in the first half. Even the second half of 2019, he was okay. He batted like 270, got on base a little bit. He was hitting some doubles. He wasn't a disaster in the second half of 2019. But his performance definitely took a huge dip from the first half and then took an even further dip in 2020. And I think what I would be most nervous about with him, he's a switch hitter, okay? You're going to face mostly right-handed pitching. You're going to face, like, I want to say like 70% of the pitching you face in the major leagues is right-handed pitching.
Mm-hmm.
So as a switch hitter, he's going to bat mostly left-handed against right-handed pitching. And here's the problem. This year, he is 4-for-36 off right-handed pitching. Last year, his OPS against right-handed pitching was 200 points lower than it was against left-handed pitching. He batted 227 with a 287 on-base percentage against right-handed pitching in 2020. And so he has become, over the last couple of years, which is about 70 games sample size, unplayable against right-handed pitching offensively.
What are the combined stats of the right side of the infield right now that you bring this up?
If you put it directly in front of me right now.
That's a pretty not good.
If you want to just like answer that?
It's more a rhetorical question. If you put Sano and Polanco's stats together, you probably get a guy who belongs in independent baseball right now.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, Miguel Sano is at 116.
Right. Well,
with
you know
a
what this
577.
You know what
OPS.
This comes to, Phil Mackey? This comes to eating more difficult conversations for breakfast if you're Rocco. But let me help you. Let me give you the game plan. All right. Miguel Sano platoons more now. You get Kirilloff up here. He can platoon some at first base. He can play left, too. And by the way, I'm playing him. He might get off to a rough start. I personally don't care. I'm playing him, okay? If I'm going to play him, and hopefully, fingers crossed, Josh Donaldson at third base stays healthy, right? Luis Arraez starts to play second base more for me. Because, like, you can't... This is the thing about the Twins. They have these runways for guys who basically crash and burn for way too long, I think. Way too long. I'm not saying Polanco gets flipped right now.
But he's on like a 7-year contract right now, too.
Yeah, but he's like, it's cheap. I don't care about that.
It's not super cheap.
It's cheap enough for me.
He makes 4.3 this year, 5.5 next year, 7.5 in 2023, and then you can get out in 2024.
Okay, I'm not
that's fair enough. You can pay it back.
I'm not saying demote him or trade him right now. But again, we're talking about what are you willing to do that might ruffle feathers for the good of your club, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I've got the solution here. This isn't as... Again, it's people have to be able to stay on the field. But if they do, the solution is right there. You've got it.
Here's another question off the offense, for instance, right? So the Bomba Squad 2 years ago, they were the Bomba Squad.
I'm sorry, the what?
They set the major.
The Bomba Squad
record.
Came and defused the Bomba Squad.
They did. The Bomba Squad was the most prolific home run hitting team in baseball history in 2019. So you were never going to like fully replicate that. And last year was a shortened season, so it's just tough. Like sometimes guys get you need a full season to really gauge, an offensive output. But the Twins last year, offensively, just in terms of runs per game, were like 20th. I think they were top 5 in runs per game when they were the Bomba Squad. So they were a below average offensive unit last year. They were 20th in runs. And then to this point, again, small sample size, the season, we're not even through April yet, but the Twins to this point this year, even though they've been scoring some runs, it's been very top heavy. Like they've had a couple big run games and they've had a couple like guys off to hot starts, but it's only like 4 guys in the lineup that are really off to hot starts, right?
Right.
So here's my question for you guys. How many hitters in this lineup are you like 100% sure can hit at a high level throughout the course of the season? Because I think it's four.
Yeah, let's go through it.
It's Donaldson.
Donaldson can,
and
for then, sure.
And by the way.
And Cruz.
You don't know if he's going to be on the field.
Sure, but I mean, he can if Cruz. He's playing Cruz. Yep.
Buxton, and you don't know if he's going to be on the field, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I actually need to see an extended period of time to make the statement that you just made.
And that's fine. I'm good on it. I think he's
okay.
I think he has found something, and we've seen him when, like last year when healthy, he was getting on base all the time. Not getting on base, but hitting for power and stuff. Yep. And then Luis Arraez. I'm good on Luis Arraez. I trust him offensively. He can make contact, etc. Besides those four guys, is there anybody else right now? And I don't want to hear like, well, Ryan Jeffers got hot for a couple weeks, or like Mitch Garver hit 30 bombs when the ball was
juiced. But Max Kepler against Trevor Bauer. Oh, wait, Trevor Bauer's with the Dodgers now.
You're not going to get to face him five times per year. Is there anybody else on the team that you would say, oh, no, you're forgetting about, this guy for sure can mash. Not has mashed once in the past 2 years ago, but like that's going to pop up and be a steady force. Because I worry about, for sure, Sano. I worry that Kepler has had basically one good offensive year in his career to this point. He's 28. My God. I mean,
come on, Jake
Jorge Polanco has had one really good year.
Yeah. Diving Jake Cave, who's playing all the time now.
You look at this lineup fully healthy, and you think back to the one that we saw a couple years ago, and you're like, oh, yeah, on paper, this is a great lineup. But the reality is a lot of these guys have come nowhere near replicating their one big year. And it's a little unsettling if you look at this offense on paper now.
I looked it up.
Am I overreacting?
No, you're exactly right. I did the research and have the right side of the Twins infield for you at the plate this season.
Oh, goody.
Miguel Sano and Jorge Polanco. 14 hits, 97 at-bats. They are batting a combined 144 with two home runs, both by Sano, and a combined 10 runs driven in. Baseball 2021. Not supposed to be like that.
Man. Yeah, that's pretty rough. That's pretty rough.
I'm still a little... I'm not sounding the alarm yet on Max Kepler. I still think he has a decent eye at the plate. He can take some walks here and there. The thing is in 2019, he finally figured out how to hit a lefty, right? Like, before then, he was unplayable against left-handed pitching. Just terrible against it. And ever since, and last year he reverted back to his old cycle. If he can just be like league average against left-handed pitching, because I know he can mash righties. He can absolutely mash righties. But he can take a walk. He has a good eye at the plate. His hard hit rate's still pretty dang good this year. I'm not sounding the alarm on him completely yet. But that still doesn't mean that like I look at him as a perennial all-star or like this guy would be a five hitter in every lineup in baseball. He probably wouldn't be. But it is interesting going back from the 2019 Bomba Squad and looking at the juice ball and also getting just like a ton of false hope. Like it gave us a ton of false hope.
I'm glad you brought up hard hit rate. I mean, we need the nerd sounder just for these baseball discussions here because...
Get those nerds!
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 Max Kepler has a 47% hard hit rate so far this year, which is really good. The problem is about half of the batted balls he hits are ground balls. So he's got a ground ball problem. He's killing a lot of worms. Like you can hit this is and this is the issue with hitting ground balls, and especially if you're a left-handed hitter, you're a pull hitter. Like you can hit all the hard ground balls you want. You're hitting it right into four infielders on the right side of second base. So that's what you see a lot of. He'll hit, "Oh, that's a hard ground ball to the right side that 20 years ago would have gone through for a hit." And now it's like there's two dudes fighting over fielding that ground ball now because they've scouted him so perfectly. Mm-hmm. So he's got to elevate the ball more, and it's almost like he's completely gotten away from hitting towering fly balls. But I don't know.
I'm going to go down a path that I absolutely deplore going down, but I feel the question needs to be asked now because we are into the start of the second year without this guy, and they clearly had success with him. Is there something to the fact that the Twins miss James Rowson, who was their hitting coach 2 years ago? They had great success, and the ball was juiced. So I'm not trying. Like I know that in 2019, the baseball left the yard, and now it might not. But is there something to the dynamic that's it feels like a really decent amount of guys have seen a decrease in their production with his exit to Florida?
Yeah, I mean, yes, I think he was widely regarded as a great hitting coach. But at the same time, what I don't understand is it's not like everything he taught those hitters just goes away when he goes away.
Yeah.
You know, do they not have like logs of when they make swing tweaks with players? Are they not keeping information on, okay, so with Max, we focused on this, this, and this. This was James's advice, yeah, was this, this, and this. It's not like James Rouse is out there like, you know, like Chubbs and Happy Gilmore standing behind the hitters. Like,
do you know that for a fact?
All in the hips.
Do you know that he wasn't out there? Do you know that he didn't have a fake hand?
Just he's in the tension.
Bring the bat back, and we're gonna swing it this way.
Do you know that? Do you know these things didn't take place at Target Field? Were you there?
Can't confirm.
Okay. I mean, Rouson perhaps had the Chubbs thing going. You don't know, but it seems odd that. There's a lot of guys who have had a decline that feels statistically very significant.
Yeah. It's definitely when you lose a good coach and someone who connects with players, then, yeah, I think it makes a difference. You see sometimes when offensive coordinators will leave a team and
sure,
a new guy comes in, we're going to run the same system. Well, why is the offense going from third to 18th or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that's not foreshadowing for the Vikings this year. Could be, I guess. But, that's your talking Twins for the day here.
Right side of the infield, can't really hit. Struggling all summer.
Watch Divin' Jake.
Oh, Divin' Jake. Divin' Jake. You guys did a deep dive into Divin' Jake.
I feel like we should talk about this on down the road a bit now. If Jake Cave continues to play this much, it's worth exploring.
What, exploring, talking
exploring
more about
why he's yes, why he is playing so much.
Is he the Victor Rask of the Twins?
You know what? He's actually
he might be.
He has some Rasconian to him, but I think he's actually worse. I think he's actually a worse player than Rask.
The difference is the Wild, there aren't like immediate superstar replacements for him. Mm-hmm. Alex Kirilloff just hit a home run on the first pitch of a sim game yesterday in St. Paul. Like, that dude will be up and play regularly at some point in the next 2 weeks. So you're not going to have to complain about JK for too much longer, fortunately.
I heard that home run, though. I heard this, okay? I heard the pine tar on the bat was off by quite a bit. And like they're like,
got to make some adjustments.
We can't call you up until you know how to accurately apply the pine tar.
Oh, yeah. After he hits a towering double off the fence in left center, I heard his secondary leads are lacking at second base.
Yep.
He's just not getting that extra step.
Same thing coming to me, too.
Got
to
work on that. Yeah. So, all right. We're going to have to – I wanted to talk some old Macadac around the house. I've got some around-the-house updates for you guys involving grilling, but I think we should save that maybe for tomorrow's show.
Don't bring your place down. I hate to see you bring your place down already.
Let's just say that I am 35 years old and I am now being domesticated for the first time, and I am now figuring out how to use a gas grill, really, for the first time.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no, no, no.
I'm going to be a grill master. I'm going to be a grill master.
I'm 51. So, I don't get near a gas grill.
The air fryer, man, it's clutch. It's
Dawn lights that thing.
An in-home grill.
I ain't going to blow myself up. Uh-uh.
Air fryers are great. I love how you just put your wife at risk with everything that
she's
might
not
be
at risk. She knows how to do it. I don't. She's trained professional. Her dad grilled, so she knows how to grill. My old man charcoal, and I ain't doing charcoal.
I love charcoal.
See, I don't want to wind up being Judd and be in my 50s and having never lit a gas grill before.
So matches.
We'll do a breakdown.
Full disclosure, matches scare me.
You don't need matches to light a gas grill.
Oh, you can if it's not working right. Dawn throws the match in there.
We've done that before in my house.
I bail.
Use like a candle lighter.
She does that too. I bail. All of it makes me go to the other side of the house.
Good on Dawn. I applaud Dawn.
Judd, just all you have to do is just pour a little few drops of gasoline on top. Yeah. That's all you have to do.
No.
Keep it close to the house. You just want to make sure
nobody's getting anywhere near gasoline.
All right, that's a wrap on today's Mackie and Judd. Tomorrow, write that down, predictions and an accountability session. Mostly us just making fun of each other for how wrong we are on a regular basis. And daily Vikings discussions on Purple Daily. ScoreNorth.com and the ScoreNorth app, central hub for everything we do. We'll see you guys tomorrow.